The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
There are many different paths you can take, but there's only one road to Atlanta.
The high drive deep out to left field. He clubbed it. Brady twisting and turning, looking up and giving up. It's a home run for Dansby Swanson. Flare out towards shallow right. That's big trouble. Albies going back. He dives and he makes the catch. What a play, Ozzie Albies. Swanson is headed for three. He'll try for it inside the Parker. Relay throw comes toward the plate. He'll score standing, and it's his second inside the park home run of the season.
This is your weekly podcast dedicated to the Atlanta Braves farm system. Follow the show on Twitter at @Road2Atlanta. Now, hit the road with your hosts, Eric Cole, Gaurav Vidak, and Garrett Spain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Road to Atlanta, a podcast devoted solely to the Braves farm system and Braves prospects. I am one of your hosts, Eric Cole. You may recognize me for my work over on TalkingChop.com, on the Talking Chop podcast, on Twitter, at Leprechaun with a K. Basically, if there's some sort of place where content can be created, I've been creating it for the Braves minor leagues for the better part of six seasons now. Joining me this evening, like last week, we have one Gaurav Vidak, who you can follow at GVDAC on Twitter. What's going on, Gaurav?
Yo, just excited about this Michael Harris opposite field home run. Can't wait to talk 45 minutes about it.
people have been tagging us on the Michael Harris stuff. We appreciate it, guys. For no other reasons, at least lets folks know that we have been on that train for a little while, but we'll get to that in just a second. And also joining us this week for back-to-back week shows now, the very busy and very talented Wayne Cavati. What's going on, Wayne?
I'm surprised I have a voice at this point with the D2 basketball tournament and baseball stuff going on, but I'm glad I was able to jump on and talk some minor league baseball with some of those proposed rules today. Did you see those?
I did. There's some of them make some amount of sense to me, like having the bigger bases. A couple other stuff. The anti-shift rules, I am skeptical are going to work.
I agree.
And I don't think that they're going to be implemented, but I'm kind of curious. I am curious as to see how they play out. And in a lot of ways, I kind of want to see how infielders play with them. If for no other reason, I think it kind of gets back to, a guy having to have actual range versus kind of being just positioned really well. But beyond that, it's fine. If they want to experiment with rules, they should absolutely do so in the minors. I thought it was weird when they were doing some of the stuff in the minor leagues, like the extra inning rule and all that other stuff a couple years ago. But then it kind of grew on me. I'm like, I would prefer them at least try it in a professional setting, but not just like try it out in the majors. So between this and what they do in the independent leagues, I mean, I'm fine with it. But other than that,
I want to just say one thing. I hope one team decides to challenge that rule and have their infield go out like 300 feet. Just a giant screw you to some of these, I don't think the rule's really an issue. It's just a funny thought that I had.
The one that I really want to see, happen in a game is the rule where the runner can steal first base. Have you heard this?
No.
Yeah, on a dropped, called strike three, you can run it out, right? But there's a rule, there was a rule, I think it was being tested in the independent leagues, and I don't remember the exact logistics, but it's like, if a ball gets past the catcher, you can take off.
No matter what. It doesn't have to be strike three.
And I would be so in for this.
Give me Billy Hamilton, man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in the Terrence minor Gore. Leagues, just yeah, like in the minor leagues, there are some guys I would love to see with that rule in place. But you know, I don't see it happening in the minors anytime soon. But if you want to make baseball more exciting, start with that. Like a guy sails onto the backstop and Ronald Acuña just takes off. Yeah. I'm in.
Eric, who is the guy? We were at the same game in the press box at Rome, and he went from first to third on a bunt.
On a bunt?
Who was that? Yeah.
So I can even visualize what he looks like. He had on our prospect list. He ended up going to Florida, and then he was released from there. The name escapes me right now, and I'm sure people are going to be shouting. You know what? Please tweet at GVDAC. Who that player was? He is happy. He is happy to take any and all requests. Because I mean, I'm brain farting him on right now. Because I actually really I liked him, particularly the speed tool. The rest of it wasn't very good. But you know, when you take third two bases on a bunt, I'm you know, color me interested. all right, but that's not what we're here to talk about. I mean, we wanted to talk a little bit about the minor league news that really just came out a couple hours ago. But the purpose of this show is to kind of do a quick retrospective and a look forward a bit on the Talking Top 30 prospects list. First of all, if you want to get a really good understanding of how we make that list and, you know, the write-ups on each one of these guys, it is really easy to find the Talking Top preseason Top 30 on the website. Just make sure you go to talkingchop.com and you'll have the list. I think starting with the top five, we have Ian Anderson over Christian Pache, which I've seen both, so it's not like completely out of the question. And that vote was really, really close, which, you know, people were wondering, you know, why we would pick a pitcher over a position player. And honestly, like, it's like kind of 1 and 1A. After that, it was Drew Waters, then William Contreras, and then the headliner of the list, I think, for me, is the biggest reach we made and the biggest bet we made was putting Michael Harris at number 5, which right now looks really, really smart. Based on how he's looked and how he's being talked about in the local Atlanta media, it's starting to happen in the national media, and the organization seems to really, really love him and have been very effusive in their praise of him. So I guess I'll go to Wayne first, and then I'll go to Gaurav. When did you like kind of realize that, I mean, we'll start on Michael, is, you know, when did you realize that Michael Harris wasn't just a guy that, I mean, a lot of people have been putting him in the early teens, you know, kind of being hedging their bets a little bit, like he's young, et cetera. But when did you kind of realize, hey, he's a guy that, you know, I need to actually kind of really be aggressive in ranking?
You know, in all honesty, I know we're going to talk about this later, but it was one of my hardest picks. And the reason why is because our team, we talk all the time. And I did not get to see Michael Harris play in person. You know, before the world shut down. So I've never had eyes on him. I've seen video. And really, it was just talking to you guys. And then didn't someone do an interview with him on Talking Chop? Was that you?
That would be me.
Yeah, the video one, right? Yeah. And then I just liked the way that he handled himself, you know, in that interview. And I'm like, okay, this guy, and you know, like we've talked about this in the past. Tools are one thing to me, but the way you handle yourself and how young he is makes those tools even stronger to me, because that's someone that could, you know, I mean, look at the guy. Look at the adversity he's faced in his first few years as a pro, from, you know, being this star on the rise to having no season and, you know, going to spring training and now back in spring training and going apo taco with a home run. So in the easy answer to the question is really from talking to you guys and really looking into the numbers and understanding the ceiling this guy could reach.
Gaurav, what about you, man?
You know, I actually really, really like that answer. That was another one of the key elements, you know, that kind of came for me last year and earlier this year when I did have the chance to interview him. When you talk to him outside of baseball, non-baseball related, shows the utmost respect. You know, you looked at my tweet, you look at my tweets and I come off, you know, I wouldn't think that someone would call me sir. But sure enough, the first time I contacted him, he hit me with a yes, sir. And it was just like, wow. Okay. I got the pleasure of being able to, find ways to talk to his family, and his family has the utmost highest character and integrity. You see that they really, really got that and made sure he learned that lesson at a very, very young age. And he's always set these really expansive goals for himself throughout his, let's see, I mean, he's still only 19 years old. You could say childhood, but he's a full adult. He's set these goals, lofty goals for himself, and he continues to work hard and exceed them. And, you know, that's a whole different reason as to why he's so successful. And Wayne, I just wanted to say that was a really good answer. For me, it came back from spring training last year when you saw him change his approach at the plate as soon as a runner reached second base. Being 18, just drafted, and that's your first experience in a big league camp, and you do something like that, that I haven't seen a lot of professional, you know, MLB players do, it shows you how dialed in he is mentally. And from then, just watching him, let's be real, I've watched so much, I try to find film everywhere, I try to talk to a bunch of people, and just seeing how hard he works, what he does in the cage, everything together, and for me, it was like, okay, I don't even think he's like a top 10 guy. I think right away we're looking at a top 5 player. And I don't know, who knows, by the end, you know, with Ian Anderson and Pache graduating this year, we might have, you know, potentially a new number one already. It's been just a meteoric rise getting to know the man. And I have to say, if there's one person I had to hedge my money on right now in the minor league system, outside of the people that are already playing in Atlanta, I'd probably put it on Michael.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more in terms of, I like that you guys focused on who he is as like a person and a player and the work ethic, because I think that's a part that gets forgotten at times is, you know, anyone who sees Michael, and he was a little bit skinnier in 2019 when we first saw him, but, you know, that those were, like, not day two tools, right? Like, he could run. He didn't ever, like, it's almost like what his lines were at Rome when we saw him, fresh out of high school, by the way, which told me a little bit of what the Braves think of him, to think that they could actually put him in full season ball right out of high school, you know, just let him out there. It wasn't like the results were awesome, but he was like hitting some like loud foul balls and like, you know, was running around, and like you could see that there was real talent there. But the important part of taking those tools and getting the most out of them is not something that can be taught. And in Michael's case, it's relentless work ethic and kind of a talent at the plate, particularly with his hands and with his wrists to make adjustments mid-swing, that gives him the power and the hit tool that I think is going to allow those rest of those tools to play. Because there's like tons of world-class athletes, of which he would be one of them. But to get where he is now, you don't get there just on athleticism. You get there from really hard work. And to do so without without a season last year. Now, the reports that we got on him out of the alternate site, you know, what limited information we got were really, really good. Right. So I don't want to like just say that just because we like talking to the guy, we put him in the top five. That's not it at all. It's just that we had a more complete picture because we've really been digging in on him, digging into who he is as a person and a player for a long time. And when you realize that he has all these physical tools and the production, admittedly in kind of a closed environment at the alternate site, plus you have this kind of strong work ethic and desires to succeed, like you can see where a meteoric rise could happen. I got asked earlier on social media if we liked him as much as we liked Acuna. The answer is no. The first time we heard Acuna, the noise that comes off Acuna's bat was completely different, right? And that's not to say that Michael Harris can't be a great player, but in Acuna's case, where we went in there thinking he's like kind of a fringe top 30 guy, to he's a top 5 player in the system after one series that we saw him, realizing that he was better than everyone else on the field. And, you know, he rewarded that faith, I guess. But anyone who watched him for an appreciable amount of time kind of felt the same way. In Harris's case, we really, really like him. He's still a little ways away. We're still talking about a guy who's pretty young. But he's also a guy that, like, has some real upside. And the Braves taking a chance on him with that pick, you know, a lot of people thought he was just going to be a pitcher. That's what the book was on him. And Matt was really excited in particular right after the draft that the Braves picked him as a position player because he liked him as a position player. And whenever Matt like really likes a prep guy, I always like gets my attention a little bit because, you know, that's where Matt lives is, you know, really understanding those prep draft picks. And when you get a guy like Harris to get him away from a college commitment and to play the position every day, you know, it's not like an Austin Riley thing where, you know, a lot of people thought Austin was going to be a pitcher and he turned into like one of the Braves' better power hitting prospects. But at the same time, when the Braves are picking a guy off position like that, it must have means that they saw something special with him. And in Michael's case, it sounds like so far anyway that that's been the case. The other big note here on our list, other than the rest of the list is going to be, you know, relatively similar to what we've ranked previously. The other big bet we made was on Mekhi Backstrom. Very interested to see where kind of he starts the season. I imagine that's probably going to be either in Augusta at low A. I'm just going to think it's going to be Augusta low A because of the lack of full season experience. But, you know, he's a guy that could move really quickly. Big time power bat. If everything clicks, he could be really, really good. We like him a lot. Now we're going to get into where things were hard. And Gaurav, I'll go to you first. When you're making your list, and you're like making your personal top 30 that we composite together for our list, who were the guys that were the hardest for you to rank?
Oh, this one is actually really, really easy to me, and that's the entire 2020 draft class. I didn't get to see them play a single inning. You know, the meteoric rise of Jared Schuster was in a very, very shortened stint. I knew he was on my radar come draft time, but I didn't have him like super high on the list. And then the more I dug into him, the more I was really impressed with what he has. And it's really tough to have a changeup that good, when you're that young. And that helped me move him up a little higher. But then everyone else, you know, Jesse Franklin, he hasn't had a healthy season in a very long time, but you know, he has those tools. Cam Shepard is undrafted and we had him in our top 30 and it's still, you know, it's something you don't normally see. But again, there were only five rounds in the draft, so it's hard to tell how other teams evaluate him. All those kind of fringe guys, you know, Elder going late, but you know, he has the arsenal. Why did he go so late? Those were probably, for me, had to be the hardest decisions. When it came to, you know, the Ian Anderson over Pache, for me, it just showed up when Ian shows up with a straight double plus changeup. That's just something that puts you away from everyone else. And while Pache's defense is double plus and incredible, you don't have the ability to have as many highlights and high-end plays as a straight double change, straight double plus changeup has in every single at-bat. And it came to, for me, just potential impact, and that's why I had Ian Anderson a little bit higher. But, yeah, really, it's just those guys we haven't had a chance to see. We haven't seen some of the fringe guys since 2019, so keeping them on the list is really difficult. You can really go only based on what a Twitter DM says, really. You know, you reach out to them and see what they've been up to, and that's really the basis of your rankings. So all in all, I'd have to say more, it was the shortened season over really the players themselves.
Wayne, what about you, man? Who are the guys that were tough for you?
So this is like such the easy way out of this question, but I'm gonna put it out there. So as you know, with minor league ball, I started covering the Braves minor league system out in Rome with Ozzie Albies back in 2015. You know, so I was there for the 2016 championship, and you know, and then I think this was my third prospect ranking with you guys, and in all honesty, everyone after Anderson and Pache was the hardest choice I had. And what you have to look at that though is that the last 3-4 years, sure, the top 10 was hard to rank, but we knew who those top 10 guys were, right? And it's not like that anymore because all those guys are on the Braves now. And I think you saw that if you look at each of our own individual top 30, 35, whatever we ranked, because they're a lot different. Usually we're a lot more on, you know, it's a couple spots here, a couple spots there, but we were a lot different this year in our opinions. And, And I think that's because of the odd offseason and because there were so many high level prospects that we've had in the past that it was easy just to throw them in the top 10. And it's a lot different now, you know, and some of these guys we've seen a little bit of, some of them we haven't, some we haven't seen in a long time. Where I'm a little bit different is, as you know, that, you know, I do some D1 baseball work. So I saw a bunch of the guys that, were drafted, and even a guy like Jesse Franklin, I got to see at the College World Series, and I really liked him there. So he was hurt, obviously going the day before last season started. So he hasn't played organized baseball in well over a year, but what I saw of him, I liked. For me, it was harder to rank those guys that I felt were going to have a big 2020 in their development and then didn't have it at all. And trying to figure out where they fit in the new scheme of things with some new prospects and everything. But I mean, again, this top 30 for us, I think across the board was one of the hardest we've ever had to do. And just, you know, looking at it, two of the guys we have in our top 30 were DFA'd, you know, and I can't remember a time that that's ever happened. So my answer is everyone, after Anderson and Pache.
That sounds about right. I will say this. The guys that I had the most trouble with, I mean, the 2020 draft class was like legitimately difficult because how do you evaluate guys who haven't played in professional baseball against others of similar value that have? And that was a difficulty that I think all of us had. But the problem I had were with the guys that have been in the system for a while, particularly the older guys, and evaluating them with essentially a lost season under their belts. Like, it's hard enough to evaluate a guy like Freddie Tardock, who was like has repeated the levels, and it's hard to really see if he's going to be able to develop into that guy that could ultimately turn into a really interesting rotation arm. He's young enough where I can say, you know what, maybe just keeping him where he is makes a certain amount of sense, at least until I can see him again. But when you talk about guys like, for example, Patrick Weigel is one guy. Where, you know, Father Time was already not on his side, and he had a Tommy John that he was coming back from, and there was essentially a lost season with one inning of relief in the major leagues being the exception to that. You know, he's on the 40-man roster, so that certainly helps, and he was able to be at the alternate site, but, you know, at some point, how much is a guy losing time when he's already has some things that going against him? Combined with the fact that it's pretty clear right now that the Braves do not view him as a starter anymore. You know, like, there's no discussion of Patrick Weigel as a rotation arm anymore. And that decreases his value. That doesn't mean he couldn't be a major leaguer, and that doesn't mean that I certainly don't like him. But at the same time, if he is being switched to a role that has a much lower impact, then that would impact where his ranking is. And it's hard to evaluate when we were writing, you know, whether or not that he was even being a starter was essentially an option anymore. Now, it's pretty clear now that it seems like the Braves are going to be running him out there as a bullpen arm, which, you know, that means that maybe he drops off the list or he drops towards the bottom, further down the list the next time we write the list. And it's those guys who are older and were trending down, I think, were the ones that were the hardest. Because you want to do right by them, right? Like, you don't want to just like, well, you got a year older and nothing happened, so sorry, but you're off the list. But the same, like the Thomas Burrows of the world have been lingering in the 28 to 30 range of our prospect list forever, and they haven't been able to make the team. At some point, that matters, you know. And then, you know, guys like Phil Pfeiffer and Jeremy Walker, those are other guys that, you know, had kind of hung around. Walker and Pfeiffer both had kind of breakout campaigns that allowed them to kind of sneak back up into the rankings. But now it seems like that they're going to have to drop back down. And those older arms are the ones that I kind of had the most trouble with. I also had a lot of trouble with Victor Vodnik because I am just not convinced at all that the Braves are going to use him as a rotation arm. And if he's not a rotation arm, then we have him ranked probably 10 spots too high. That doesn't mean we don't like him as a reliever. I mean, the guy throws absolute gas, but I'm just not sure that's going to happen. I'm not sure he has the body for it to do that over a long season. As a spot start, that makes a certain amount of sense, but you know, he was a guy that I had some trouble with too. And it's because of that role. It's because I just don't know if he's going to be a starter or a reliever. And, you know, at the end of the day, I really like relief prospects because they're really interesting and they can tend to move up systems really fast if they're really good. But they're impact on a major league roster, especially if you're not like one of the top ones, is debatable. And that's why, generally speaking, we either don't really rank them very often, or if we do, they're pretty low. Before we go on to go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to add in real quick. I want to say, like, one of the, outside of Thomas Burrows, like, the other reliever that we really had on our list was AJ Minter. And he was in the system for like 2 years and he was off to the majors. So it's really hard to, just to echo what you're saying, it's really difficult to keep relievers on there just because, one, their volatility, and then two, the really, really good ones, they're just not around for that long.
Yeah, I mean, we've liked other ones too, like Chase Johnson Mullins was in our honorable mentions 1 year. We've ranked Corbin Clouse before. He's coming back from an injury. Casey Kalik's another guy that, you know, could sneak back onto a top 30 pretty quickly, you know, once he's fully recovered and throwing again. I mean, like, these things can happen, but it's not something that happens all that often, and we have to be pretty sure about a relief arm that he's going to hold up and all that stuff. Now, for the second half of the podcast, for a couple more questions, we're going to talk a little bit about the guys who we think could fall off the list and guys who could potentially make their way back onto our list or make big jumps. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick word for our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, boys, and we're back. So let's talk about the future. We've kind of talked about a little bit about the list itself. And again, I don't want to dig too much into kind of, you know, like, why is Justin Dean one spot ahead of Bryce Ball, that sort of stuff, because I think we all are of the agreement. We've been pretty clear that our list should best be viewed in kind of in a tier type system. So I don't want to get into too much of the minutia of it, but I do want to talk specifically about players that you have, and you can talk about your personal top 30s. It doesn't have necessarily the talking chop one. But who are some guys that you think have realistic chances of actually either making significant drops down your list or could fall off the list completely? And that doesn't include, like, losing prospect eligibility. That doesn't count. So, Wayne, I'll go to you first and then Gaurav.
I think I've always said this. I feel bad. But I think, you know, we're going to see Ian and Pache graduate, right? So we're going to have a battle for who that top prospect is. And, you know, we've hinted that it could be Michael Harris, but, you know, like, so I think a guy like Drew Waters, when you have him number three slotted in there, is like the expected guy to become the number one prospect in the system just the way it is. But I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think he's going to drop off the list by any means, but I think he may fall a little bit compared to where we've traditionally ranked him. Again, I don't think he falls out of the top five, but I think by midseason we may be surprised at where he stands. I think some of the college guys have a good chance to rise, so I'm not going to really put them in a conversation about guys that can fall. But, you know, you kind of mentioned older guys, right? And it makes me wonder kind of about, And I hate to say this, but I'm just using him as an example. But like a Trey Harris, right? Like, he is older for a prospect, and he lost a year. And if he comes out cold, you know, and he doesn't come out strong, I mean, don't get me wrong. Last show we were talking about him possibly competing for the fourth outfield spot. But on the other end of the spectrum, if he doesn't get that and he comes out cold and he kind of just fades away with the depth that this system has at outfield, how far does a guy like that fall down the list? You know, it makes me wonder. Another guy I've always been curious about is CJ Alexander. I don't know what that guy could do, whether he goes up or down. But I think, you know, like, I'm going to be watching guys like Joey Estes and Hayden Deal and Deisbel Hernandez, and you said Vodnik. I need to see how those guys bounce back after not really playing competitive baseball for a year. And I think those are the kind of names that we'll be looking at that may drop down the list quite a bit.
Rob, what about you, man?
So I'll start off by saying I disagree with Wayne when it comes to Drew Harris. I think most likely we'll see him, you know, one or two. It would take a lot for me personally to have Michael jump him already just because he's had, you know, 40 games of pro ball experience or something like that. Outside of that, you know, I literally have on my notes for this every single name that the two of you have already talked about. I was huge on CJ Alexander when we drafted him because he had the tools, but so far he hasn't put it together. Then he got injured. He had surgery. He's finally back, and he didn't perform too well in spring training. And I think he's most likely been cut. So for him, this is just such a key, important season for him in terms of, you know, value. If he bounces back and shows he's fully healthy and puts together a really quality season, he's jumping back onto those lists. But for me, to go from, you know, top 15 to now not, you know, potentially dropping off entirely in just a 2-year span, that's, you know, rather unfortunate. And like you said, I'll also echo on Patrick Weigel as well. It's really, just really tough to come back from an injury like that. And then you don't know what kind of impact the layoff has had on him. He showed up, you know, in the majors last year and wasn't particularly too good. Now, like you said, he's pretty much a strict reliever. So what kind of value does that have? He's most likely going to drop further if he doesn't perform well. So, it's the older, quote unquote, older arms, in the system, especially when you have this high school wave of players that are really, really talented starting to develop a little more.
Yeah, I think that that's where we're at with the list right now, is in this bottom half. It's just that those the Patrick Weigels, the, you know, Philip Pfeiffer's, Jeremy Walker's, Thomas Burrows, Hayden Deal, those are all guys that we could see drop significantly or off the list completely. If for no other reason that while we're going to see some graduations, the midseason list is going to include a somewhat increased draft class size. It's not going to be 5 rounds like it was last year, but it's not going to be like the full 40 either. So, you know, that kind of gets into a certain amount of weirdness of kind of what we can kind of project what that list is going to look like. But I will say that one guy that I could see a lot of volatility up and down is Mekhi Backstrom. Because if he at midseason he's hitting like under 200 or something, because he's still a young guy, we haven't seen him against older competition yet. We haven't seen him against live competition. You know, it's to be determined as to kind of how he's going to do in full season ball. And we like him, of course. We certainly want to see him. How do I put it? We certainly want to see Mekhi succeed, and he has all the bat speed and the power that you want. But for a first base prospect, you have to really, really hit. And, you know, how much of a leash do they give to a really young kid to just continue to run out there playing first base and not putting up any production? I don't actually know the answer to that question. I don't think that the Braves make the pick to go grab Mekhi on day 3 like they did if they didn't really like him. And this is a kid that if, you know, he didn't have some like vision problems and didn't have a kind of a rough senior year because of it, he was not going to be available on day 3. But what does that mean? I mean, what does that lay off for a really young kid? What does that do to him? I mean, in some respects, maybe allows him to grow into his man body a little bit more and, like, you know, really kind of get to understand a little bit about how to, like, stay conditioned and how to do preparation for games and things like that. Maybe he takes that time like that, or he needed that time on the field to develop those skills, and maybe it puts him a little bit behind. It would not shock me if Mekhi fell down the list, at least initially, a good ways. That doesn't mean he's, like, you know, these are snapshots in time. These are not, how do I put it? I guess these are not the end-all, be-all where, like, all of a sudden, like, because a guy drops some spots, that it's an irreversible trend, right? And another guy that's in kind of the same boat is Stephen Paolini, because he's a guy that, you know, was, like, a fascinating story of, like, you know, somehow they found this kid on, like, a backwoods, you know, baseball lot and, you know, in rural Connecticut somewhere, or, like, a private Connecticut league, and he, you know, blew the scouts away to where they decided to, you know, snatch him up out of nowhere. I mean, we didn't have any information on him. We were pretty fortunate to get the information when we did. But that's a kid that needed time. That's a kid that needed reps, and he didn't get them. So what was he doing with his time? I suspect that he was working very, very hard. We wouldn't put him in the top 30 if we didn't think that he didn't have the ceiling or the talent to do so. I mean, talk about physical tools. I mean, Stephen Paolini has all of them too. He's a guy that could jump up the list. But he's also a guy that could fall off if, you know, those physical tools that the Braves were betting on when they drafted him, that they could ultimately not be enough. Like, you know, he just might not hit enough. He might not have a play the position well enough. You know, maybe once he has grown into his body a bit more, that changed some things mechanically, and then things just don't work out. Those things happen all the time. All right, one last question, and then I'm going to let you boys go. And that's kind of the opposite, because I don't like to end these sorts of things on less than positive notes. I want to talk about the guys that could jump on the list. Now, obviously, there's going to be a bunch of new names at the mid-season, if for no other reason that the draft class is going to feature at least a couple names. If it's less than two, then we have real problems with what happened in that draft class. But Gaurav, I'm going to go to you first, and then Wayne. Who are some guys that, like, maybe you had at the back end of your top 30 or were off your top 30, but you could see jumping in and making, like, the full TC list next year?
Oh, man, just like we talked about Paolini and Backstrom, this question comes from, you know, majority of these answers come from that same draft class, and Ricky DeVito, Jared Johnson, Joey Estes. Not so much Ricky DeVito. He's, you know, polished college arm. I still think full season with him, his stock goes back up. But Jared Johnson and Joey Estes, we know that they have the tools, that they can pitch well. It comes down to getting that pro ball experience. Jared Johnson with that electric fastball. Outside of those, I'll also take the easy answer and say Tavares, our international signing. He'll be making his debut. He's obviously going to jump on that top 30 list. And then another interesting one could be Caden Morton, also from that same draft class, but super toolsy, super, super toolsy player. Can his hit tool play enough where he makes that big jump and, just progresses to what he could be, and he'll easily, just athlete alone, is worthy of being a top 30, member on the list as well. So I would say, it comes down really to that 2019 draft class. There's a lot of really hidden gems throughout that entire listing. And if they progress the way that the Braves hope they will, that's a star-studded draft. Those are, you know, 7-8 players already on the top 30 list. So it's, again, like when it happened and we went straight high school route, I remember thinking, oh, okay, like this is the Braves going all in. We're used to see them, kind of used to seeing them spend more of those late picks on college age, you know, 4-year seniors that are there to fill out the minor leagues. But then Anthopoulos decided to go all in, get these high ceiling players. And those are the ones I think that I'm watching very, very specifically. I want to see how someone like Jared Johnson took that, not year off, but the year where he didn't play organized ball, see what kind of work he put in, because that's an alive electric arm that could really, really skyrocket.
Wayne, what about you, man?
First, was his name Randy Ventura? The guy that
Randy,
oh, the GCL legend that had like 70 stolen bases.
Yeah, like was it him?
Well, hold on, before we go any further, I want to say that meme that started with the minor league recaps that like turned into like a whole Braves Twitter meme is hysterically funny to me. Like when Garrett and I were recapping games that had Randy Ventura in them, Gaurav, were you recapping games when Randy was around?
Oh yeah, those were hilarious. Yeah. 2 for 5, 7 stolen bases.
Yeah, like when he was like in the DCL, we'd like put like the little notes as to how many stolen bases he had, and like over time, like the commenters would be like, you know, like the man, the myth, the legend. And if we didn't put it in there, they'd ask how many stolen bases he had, because the number probably had to go up if they had a game. So that was too good. That was too funny. those were good times. That and the Dion Toscano, is he a real person type stuff.
Nice. I don't really have to answer the question because I think Gaurav nailed it. I mean, especially that last – or I'm sorry, not the last draft class. The 2019 draft class, I think a lot of those names, they were just athletic type of players, and they're really exciting, and I think they could. I think he hit all the names on the head. I mean, I you know, just throwing out a couple names I really like. I really like Ricky DeVito, and he was one of our honorable mentions. And I talked about him on the last show. Like, he's like a weird kind of guy, right? He's a college arm that pitched in Rome and, you know, lost 2020 and probably could have climbed up the ladder pretty quickly and been touching on Gwinnett this year. So we'll see how quickly he moves up. And then I really like Bryce Elder. I think we had him at like 17 or 18 on our rankings, and we got the Braves got him what in the fifth round, right? And yep. I think, I mean, he is not, I'm not looking at him. He's not going to be an ace. I don't think he's a top of the rotation guy, but, he was a very good pitcher, for a very established program in college baseball. And that's what I liked about the 2020 draft is they took these established college players that pitched against good competition, or in Jesse Franklin's case, hit against good competition. And they have those experienced, the arms in their system, and I think Elder has a good chance to jump up a little bit. And same with Strider. You know, I mean, we know nothing about him. He threw what, a couple innings, I think 12 innings total after a lost year of Tommy John before being shut down again. So we know nothing about him, but I mean, there's a reason they drafted him with barely seeing anything on him. And then I don't know if you mentioned him, but the William Woods, all the 99s and 100s that we're seeing on Twitter, definitely has me intrigued. It depends what else he could do with all that velocity, but, he's the kind of guy that I definitely have my eye on that could jump up this list by midseason if those strengths continue to grow and he harnesses them.
Yeah, I think that the names that you mentioned, those high school arms, particularly from that 2019 draft class, are the guys to bet on to jump up the list, because the guys who are going to fall off are likely to be arms, I think. Most likely, anyway. And the guys who are going to jump on, I mean, I could see a world where, like, a Grayson Janista, like, goes wild, and all of a sudden we have to kind of consider him in, like, the back end of a top 30 again. You know, but most of the guys who are going to have momentum are, and it's hard to identify which one it's going to be because we haven't seen these guys in so long, are those prep arms that, you know, grew into the bodies a little bit, and all of a sudden maybe they have a tick more velocity, or they have a tick more mastery of their breaking ball, or they learned how to throw a changeup over the course of 2020. All those things are like things that can make big differences. I'm really looking, Jared Johnson that Garoff mentioned a few times, he's a guy I'm really watching closely. Matt's particularly high on him. Matt had him like firmly in the early 20s on his list. And again, you know, I don't make those leaps on guys until I actually get to see them, but that makes me like, I put a little asterisk. So I'm like, okay, where is that guy playing? I need to make sure I get good. I need to make sure I get a good look at him. A couple guys that I could see making real moves. Spencer Strider is a good pick. I think is if he's starting, you know, that changes the calculation a good bit. But one guy that, and I wouldn't be surprising if this happened because of where the Braves drafted him, but I'm pretty sure Matt would burn down a building if it happened, is Bo Phillip. Because he's a guy like we kind of completely forget about that, like the Braves even drafted, you know, but he was a productive player on a very good college team who could hit. And while, you know, his pro debut was not great. I mean, I don't think we've ever really knocked a guy for a bad debut. We only just take note of it when it is good. Because, I mean, those pro debuts, I mean, like, those guys played long college seasons, and it's kind of hard to, you know, knock them too much. But if Bo Phillip's hitting 300 and, you know, hitting extra bases and stuff like that, and we're, you know, what we think's going to happen is that we're going to start losing some arms off our rankings pretty quickly, I wouldn't be shocked if like that was a move that happened. And another guy that the Braves recently acquired, Jalen Miller. He was a local prep guy and was in the Giants system for a while. He's now in the Braves farm system. He's been playing a little bit too long for me to get too much hopes too much for, you know, a grand turnaround, but I liked him when I saw him in high school, and I liked him when I saw him playing early on in his career, so it wouldn't be shocking to me if he, you know, he ended up being something. But it's those kind of, I think you guys hit it on the head, is that those prep arms the Joey Estes, the Jared Johnsons, those kinds of guys are the ones to really kind of bet on as to making a move. One other guy who everyone on the Rome coaching staff swore had a major league arm, and we have not seen him be able to control his stuff at all, is Trey Riley. And if he had a good season, would you be shocked if, like, I would not have any hesitation at all if Trey Riley had a good first half, put him in the 20s somewhere.
That's an easy decision.
Yeah, the stuff is great. He just can't. Mm. He just doesn't know where it's going. And if it's the stuff's there, and he's especially if he's starting, like he's probably in the early 20s right now. So those are the kind of guys that I identified as kind of, you know, the guys who could jump on the list. And I'm sure there's going to be a couple guys that we've never, I won't say we've never heard of, but are guys who will come out of nowhere and, you know, make hay and, you know, make the back half of the bottom five or so of the top 30 at midseason. And I'm all for it. I'm happy. I love when those things happen. And I think that Wayne and Grau would agree is that when the unexpected happens, that's when we get our juices flowing and we start really kind of getting, you know, more engaged, I guess is the best way I know how to describe it.
I think we have an opportunity for that this year too, right? With having not seen so many players in so long, we're going to have pleasant surprises, probably some unpleasant disappointments too. But I think that our midseason list, we're going to have a lot of fun and be excited about trying to put together.
Couldn't agree more. Garav, do you have anything else you want to add before I let everyone go?
No, just that I'm looking so freaking forward to a hopefully potentially fully healthy 2021 minor league baseball season. There's so many players that I want to get back and watch develop. And it's just such a special place in my life. And I'm so glad that we're almost there.
Yeah, it's about to happen, and I certainly don't want to jinx it either, because, you know, we don't want to ignore the fact that there's, you know, a pandemic kind of raging around us. Fortunately, it seems like, you know, the vaccine rollout's going reasonably well. I just today was able to get appointments for myself and my stepson. My wife's already got her first dose in, and so once we're vaccinated and good to go, you know, we can kind of start returning to at least a little bit more normalcy. And I'm looking forward to be back on the field, probably back out in the field more than anything. I've already kind of put out the word to the boys, not just these two gentlemen I'm talking to, but Matt and Garrett and basically anyone else I can get my hands on for information, we're going to be out in the fields quite a bit, especially if we can kind of get vaccinated and all that stuff. I don't want to put anyone in danger, but at the same time, you know, I think it's important for us to kind of get back out there and really be monitoring these guys that a lot of you rely on us for good information on, and I want to make sure that we can provide that. So I imagine that I'll be at Rome quite a bit. That's the closest affiliate to me. I'll get to Gwinnett for like a series probably, but I also want to spend some time out in Augusta to check out the new Low A affiliate, kind of get to know those folks out there. And I am going to commit to going to a Mississippi Braves series down there in Pearl. It's been four seasons since I've actually been down to Mississippi. I've caught some games when they were a little closer, but I actually haven't been down the Pearl in a long time. So I'm going to make sure I get down there for at least a series to kind of get a look at those guys too. And we're really making an effort to, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of like, we're, you know, two or three of us might be at one series because we just want to meet up and hang out because that's fun to do when all of us get together and talk baseball on the field. But, you know, also kind of spreading it out a little bit to get different looks at the guys at different times. So be on the lookout for all that information. Make sure that you're checking out the podcast here. And if you want to continue to get this podcast, there's an easy way to do that. Just make sure you subscribe to the Talking Chop podcast stream on whatever podcast provider you prefer, Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, whatever you prefer. You'll get not only this podcast, but you'll also get the Talking Chop podcast that is hosted by the great Brad Rowland, which is occasionally guest hosted and or co-hosted by yours truly or Scott Coleman or basically whoever Brad can get to deal with him on a nightly basis. It's a lot of fun over there on that podcast as well. So make sure you are, you know, leaving strong reviews for the podcast stream that helps us grow the podcast. We really appreciate all the support. We're glad to kind of get back on the horse and be doing this podcast more regularly. We're going to probably do the next couple. We're probably going to be mailbag type podcasts here on Road to Atlanta until we can kind of get the minor league season rolling again. We might do some sort of spring training retrospective at all based on how the prospects did once spring training ends. But beyond that, we appreciate you guys so much. Thanks, and we'll see you next time, and we'll see you on the road.